Everybody, and welcome to another installment of Pod Stallions, the Plaid Stallions podcast. I'm Brian, and with me as always is Jason.
Hello, everybody.
And we're doing something a little different. We're going to do a bit of a mini-sode because Jason's got this rarely heard of thing called San Diego Comic Con that he's got to go to. So, you know, we wanted to get one out before he goes off to do this thing. I don't know what you guys do there. Is it like a Shriners convention?
I'm sorry. Is that this week? I wasn't listening.
Yeah. We're great
this
at improv.
Week?
Yes.
Wait, is this the 9th?
It is. Oh, it's tomorrow.
You know they moved it up by like 2 full weeks.
Did they?
Yeah.
I never go. So
personally, I don't get it. I don't know how you suddenly go, well, there's a Shriner convention the usual weekend, and everyone just shifts it to a couple weeks early.
Well, I think if you build it, they will come, right?
Well, listen, I'm trying to make this month spectacular. Because we don't have to say exactly what's happening at the end of the month, but I'm finally becoming a woman. Let's say it.
Brave choice.
I got a big birthday coming up. Going to see Spamalot, which I've never, ever, ever seen. As massive of a Python fan as I am, I've never seen it. And Eric Idle will be there.
Neat.
My buddy's getting married the week before. We got Comic-Con. There's my usual stuff that I do at the orphanage and the fireman's home, pensioner's home, and the soup kitchen, which takes up most of my week.
And while you're at Comic-Con, I'll be having exciting times replacing my daughter's door. and putting in shelves in my son's room.
Yeah. There's, you know, that can be fun.
Yeah, just almost the exact same thing.
No, it's going to be crazy, and it's lots of madness. And as everybody knows, it's weirder and more mad every year.
Yeah, it's. I don't think I've ever been as sweaty as I was at San Diego Comic Con.
No,
because it was a lot of people.
I'm going to say something.
Yeah,
and it may not be popular, but I need to say it.
All right.
One of the biggest hang-ups that everybody has about Comic Con, and every time I talk about it, I want to make it very clear. I am very aware of how privileged I am to be going to Comic-Con, that I'm in the vicinity, that it ain't that hard to get there, that because of the nature of what I do, I can get there, etc. I'm not peeing in the cornflakes here. I do love it. I dig it. It's a lot of work. Having said that, the one thing, what would you pick would be the one thing that you would think has made things more sweaty and more congested? And more, as you're walking along, you're going, what's going on? You know, in the big hall. What do you think gums up the works more than anything?
I hate to say it because I have nothing against this at all, but it's actually not them themselves. It's cosplayers taking photos.
Yes.
Yeah. When the last time I was at San Diego Comic Con, a lot of people went home with photos of cosplayers and an angry jerk. Because I would just march into the photos because it was driving me crazy.
Well, it's this sort of. I can get really uptight about it because it's like, what is this assumption that I am going to stop every 5 feet because you want to take? And what are you doing with all these pictures?
I have a couple of those photos, so I'm not completely like.
Oh, okay, but I'm saying if.
You know what they are? They really are. It's especially whenever you watch any news coverage of a Comic Con. Yeah, they will immediately show, the girl dressed as Supergirl or a whole bunch of Stormtroopers. I get it. It's cool. The stopping people in the middle of the aisles to take photos is irritating. I agree with you.
I'd like to point out, back to what Brian just said about the woman dressed as a stormtrooper, I'd like to point out this is a new phenomenon. There were no such things as ladies dressed like stormtroopers when we were kids.
No, but there was no such thing as, like, I've probably said this before, but digging through the Masonic Temple comic cons, which were just BO-laden affairs back in the 80s, I can remember I was under a table digging through comics looking for Gold Key Star Treks or something else, and I looked, and there was a girl next to me, and a cute girl, like, you know, and I just, I remember my first thought is she lost? Because this was just dudes. So, and I have absolutely nothing against that. I'm so happy that these things aren't, you know.
Thank God it's been embraced by.
Oh, yeah.
The fair. I think it's fantastic.
I'm just not happy, actually, with our gender when it comes to a woman dressing as Wonder Woman. That they don't behave quite the way, like, you know, the word cool gets thrown around a lot, but I don't think a lot of people know its meaning. Don't have your jaw dropping out and take a million photos of this woman in such a Bob Guccione fashion. It's a little, it's a little creepy.
Ryan, what's our motto?
Cosplay is not consent.
Cosplay is not consent.
And again, Comic-Con aside, we're doing a mini-sode today, and we thought a fun topic would be worst picks. So, you know, our choices for worst Star Trek episode, which is the first question. And just go down.
Can I just digress for a second?
Yeah.
When you told your story about the comic thing, and you're under the thing with the gold key, and you see the woman. And
yeah.
There was an episode of The Simpsons. Comic book guy is doing his thing, and he goes, he's looking through the bins, and he goes, someone has put the Spectacular Spider-Man in with Spectacular Peter Parker. This will not do. And he's getting uptight, and then all of a sudden a girl shows up and asks him a question. He looks at him and just goes,
yep.
And he just drifts. And I thought, maybe, did you submit that to The Simpsons? As a
No, but I don't think it's an uncommon thing.
You know? Well, not now it isn't.
Yeah.
No, but back in the late 50s when you were going to conventions.
There was at these shows there was a stage, and there was a dealer known at that stage who had such spectacular body odor that you wanted to jump off the stage. I remember it was like a whole cone of his silence, you know. But yeah, it was
I just don't know how you don't. Let me tell you something. I'm hyper aware of all that stuff.
I might be too aware.
Well, what's the problem?
I don't know. I don't know how you get to that stage, and I may never know. I hope to never know.
Once again, you've completely derailed.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm wrecking this. So let's begin with our first question, which is, what is your worst classic Star Trek episode? And you see, let me just give a parameter here for I don't necessarily mean what is the consensus for a bad show. Like, you know, a lot of people would say Spock's Brain. I love Spock's Brain. I watch it once a year.
Well, it's based on the Iliad, isn't it?
Yes, it is, actually. It's a fun episode. I'm talking about...
It's mental.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
It's just crazy town. It's just...
I think I saw that when I was 7, and I remember going, like, this is stupid. But I really enjoyed it, so...
But see, I had a thing, you know, as a kid. Like, I loved Kirk,
mm-hmm.
but I think I really dug Spock.
Oh, yeah, he was the more captivating character.
And so the episodes where bad things happen to him really made me uncomfortable as a kid. I can't explain what I mean by uncomfortable, but it's sort of...
I feel you.
Like, the, you know, what's the one? The Apple is the one with the hippies, not the hippies, but the beatniks with the...
That's the Way to Eden.
That's the Way to Eden. Mm-hmm. The one where he gets zapped by lightning and he gets hit by the flower and all the stuff happens to him.
Oh, that's the Apple. Yeah.
He's got like 3 things in the first 20 minutes that happen to him. And yeah. Every time that episode would come up, it would just make me cringe.
He gets his butt kicked in that one. You're right.
He really does. Yeah. He gets hit by lightning. He gets hit by the flower.
Mm-hmm. So that is your least favorite Star Trek episode?
No. No. That's not my least favorite.
Okay.
My least favorite. It reached those you know, there's some heady writing sometimes for television and for sci-fi. They took it very seriously. You know, the third season went crazy and all that stuff. But it's got to be Cat's Paw, right?
Really? You don't like Cat's Paw?
That's the one with Scotty as Jack the Ripper?
No, that's not. You're really pulling my brain here. I know.
What's the one where Hogan tries to break out of the camp? Which episode is that?
That's every episode.
What am I? What's the one?
The one with Red Jack. The Jack the Ripper is your least favorite episode.
Okay. I'm getting my episodes mixed up. Cat's Paw is a Scotty centric episode, right?
No.
What's the Scotty centric where he's obsessed with the woman?
Oh, that's that. Oh, the Lights of Zetar. Is that it?
That's a big steaming pile of.
Yeah, that is not a favorite of mine either.
That's terrible. That's a terrible, terrible show.
Yeah, Scotty is like really kind of. He's really out of character. Like he's kind of schoolboy crushed on a woman we've never met before. And then she gets. Don't they have to put her in a barometric pressure chamber?
Yeah, and she's real uptight. You know,
yeah.
Like, there's something going on behind her eyes, and he keeps trying to go. Oh. You know, Lassie, you got to lay down, get better, you know. And she keeps telling him to, you know, take a hint, dude. She's not interested.
Yeah, I seem to recall a piece by David Gerald complaining about that episode, too. Thinking it was uncharacteristic of Scotty and it didn't really kind of fit. But, you know, that was episodic TV and that was something Star Trek was trying to break out of was that.
Do you want to know what my runner-up is?
Sure.
Number two is?
What?
Charlie X.
Really? I think a lot of people would love that episode.
I know a lot of people of a certain persuasion that would love that episode. I'm talking about the Nazis. No.
Oh.
There's a moment in that episode that is you cannot watch it with a straight face. That episode.
Okay. I haven't watched that one in a long time, so.
It is the wrestling scene.
Oh, with him and Kirk.
Where Kirk is shirtless with the greatest man breast of all time, and he's teaching him how to wrestle, and then it gets weird or something, and he's trying to discipline Charlie.
Yeah,
he says something like, "Charlie, go to your room," and then Charlie says like, "No, I don't want to," or something, and Kirk goes, "Go to your room or I'll pick you up and carry you there," and as he's saying it, he's wearing like tights and no shirt. Couldn't be less threatening. Like, if that was your dad, you'd just start laughing. Like, well, really? What are you going to do? You look like a shirtless Hamlet.
That's funny, man. I never thought you'd have Charlie X. Like, there's a lot of weird ones or boring ones, but that one I wouldn't. That one I wouldn't have picked. That's funny.
I'd put it number two, and number three, I'd be the one with the Michael J. Pollard, the kids. I hated those kids.
Oh, Miri.
God, yeah. I hated those kids. The one where they smacked their hands?
Yeah.
I wanted to kill them all.
Wait a minute. I think you're getting two episodes mixed up again.
Listen.
Wow, you have a compact memory, sir.
Let me say something. I know Big John, Little John better than anybody you could talk to.
Okie pokey.
What's the one, the kids that they smack their fist into their left hand?
And the angel comes.
Yeah.
That's not the one with Michael J. Pollard.
Listen.
Hey.
Okay, well, that one I hate.
Okay.
Those kids and the guy that shows up. Did you ever see Zodiac?
No. I know that guy shows up as Melvin Belly, a lawyer.
Yeah, Brian Cox.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, Brian Cox plays him in that, yeah.
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 It's crazy. It's Melvin Belly.
Yeah, his son is one of those kids. My choice for worst is The Empath. It's a dreary kind of episode. It's not very fun. And the reason I think I hate it is because when I was about, let's say, 10 or 11 years old, I was in my grandfather's office, and my grandparents had this aerial that could get every UHF channel on the planet.
Cool.
And I was sitting in there once, and you know, this little black and white TV, I found Channel 31, which was, I could never get Channel 31 at home. It was a golden opportunity, and they always everything was better on Channel 31. And, you know, I turn it on and I've got the end credits to Hogan's Heroes. And it says, coming up next, Star Trek. And I'm thinking, oh, I've got it made. And it's that episode. And, you know, it's basically 60 minutes of Dr. McCoy getting tortured on a like a blackout stage. So, and, I, you know, for a payoff that's, I'm sorry, I was bored crazy at 11. And you know, I've never even actually watched that episode since.
My brother.
And please, people with Star Trek OCD, do not email me and tell me to reconsider. I will not do it.
For that episode?
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, you just said something. You just, the way you laid that whole thing out mm-hmm. was very, you know, I hate to do this, but like this was a time when this was a syndicated show.
Yeah.
You couldn't just watch it anytime you wanted. It was on at a certain time and good luck. You know?
Yeah. And you rolled the dice and you took your chances, you know?
Well, you did, but also, you know, you didn't, you didn't, you know, sometimes the TV listings were a little more explicit than others.
Mm.
But if I sat in front of it, in front of the television with my brother Jack, first minute he would know what episode it was.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of an older brother, eh?
Isn't that crazy, though? Mm-hmm. When I think back on it now, it's like, how many times did he see these shows to be able to know that? Because it wasn't at his fingertips.
But you also had to read about that stuff. And, you know, there was print. And we had more time back then. We weren't looking at Facebook videos.
I do have an apology to make now that you mentioned. We're talking about my brother. He had a couple of the Star Trek books. Star Trek Logs, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, those Alan Dean Foster things? Or?
But there was no, it was like a purple cover.
Okay.
It was more of a making of.
Oh, yeah, I had one of those.
And there was another one that was a making of. And the middle section had a picture section.
Yeah, like black and white photos, yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know what came over me at 5 or 6, but I took a scissors to those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut out the phaser and the tricorder.
That was probably Inside Star Trek by David Gerald or something
that's
like that.
The one. It's got a picture of the Enterprise on the cover, right?
Yeah, it's got a picture of a model. I don't know if it's the Enterprise. You could be right. I loved that book, by the way.
My brother went mental.
Yeah.
When he saw what I did.
Well, you know, you could probably replace that for $6 now. So.
Yeah, I probably could.
Chop chop.
Okay.
Okay, so let's move on to our next topic, which is worst Star Wars figure you had as a kid.
Boy, that's a toughie, man.
Oh, it's so drop-dead simple for me. You want me to go first?
Is it Ben?
It is not Ben.
It's not Ben?
No, he was an integral character. Okay, I'll paint the picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1983.
Yep.
I'm waiting to get on a bus. To go home, I assume. I don't know. I was at a mall, and I popped in the drugstore, and they had, you know, the toy section, you know, Mego Love Boat figures, and they had an assortment of Return of the Jedi figures. And I'm probably 12 at this time, and I'm starting to feel that, like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore with action figures. You know, that feeling?
Sure.
But I'm still a kid at heart, and I buy a General Mandeen. Action figure. And how could you hate him? He was in the film for a minute.
I'll tell you why I hated him. I hated his hair.
Oh.
A terrible hair.
Okay. Well,
did you have an assortment in front of you to choose from?
Yeah, I think I had it's 32 years ago. But I'm going to say that I probably had, you know, Kalato, Nikto, Gormoran Guard, those characters, you know, and I bought a couple of those. There was no Luke or Leia or Han in this pile. And I bought General Mandeen and I opened him on the bus and I was just sitting there looking at it and I'm like, why did I get this guy? Like, what would I do with this guy? You know, and he's got that. I don't know if he's got.
It's like a baton, right?
Like a lead pestle or something. And mm-hmm. it's sort of like, oh, a useless accessory. You know, like, give him a gun.
Like, you're a useless character and you have a useless accessory.
Yeah, like, you know, if he had a gun, he would be kind of cooler. Like, at least the Bespin guards had guns.
He'd be more relevant.
Yeah, and I just remember, so I think that action figure actually it symbolizes you're too old for action figures.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
Always hate that character.
That's interesting.
Well, I'm probably sure I still have him too. That's the funny part.
The funny part of this though is I remember even as a kid joking with my older cousin about the obscure characters that started to get made into action figures. You know, we would joke, like, what was the guy that did the thing in the thing? Is he going to be made into it? I mean, come on. You know, as kids, we're, like, critiquing, you know, the abundance of characters that are going to come out and the obscurity and everything. I'm going to have to, for first of all, first movie, everything is gold. Everything is...
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. There's nobody bad in that bunch. I'm a huge Death Squad Commander fan. So
yeah, let's call it what it is. Death Squad Commander.
Yeah.
Empire comes around, and as you know, it hit me pretty hard emotionally.
Yes. Are you over it yet?
No.
No. Okay.
I don't think you – do you ever get over that? The thing is, like, you know, it was my life from 77 to that next movie. And if you were, you know, like-minded like me and – it really messed you up what happened to, you know, one of your heroes, which was Han.
Yeah.
It was really – I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, it was pretty – yeah, I remember being shocked by that.
You know, and I remember as a kid looking at my watch going, oh, he's going to get out of this. There's plenty of time. So – but, you know, everything started to kind of sort of – leave a bad taste in my mouth. The products, and then, you know, it's like looking through a Sears catalog and there's a Bespin Freeze Han playset. And I thought, you bastards, rub it in. You know, I don't want that thing.
Adding insult to injury.
Exactly. And so the Empire stuff was much slower, whereas Star Wars was like, gotta get it. And I probably can't think of an Empire. I'm going to go with Jedi. And you know who I'm going to go with?
Who?
I got two words for you. Put them together. Keeper and Rancor.
Oh, the Rancor Keeper. Yeah.
Who liked that douche?
Well, you know what? I knew one guy who did because he told me, oh, that looks exactly like my dad.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one because it's like his entire line in that movie is to cry.
Is a joke.
Yeah, is a joke. So, and then Kenner popped an action figure out of him. So,
and it's indicative of, you know, just my opinion, man. It's indicative maybe of where things started to go a little pear-shaped.
I would have to agree with you. Yeah.
Today, just for the record, is the day that the internet sort of confirmed that certain people, the Lego guy, movie guys, are doing a spin-off Star Wars Han Solo film. And this has caused a lot of stuff. And I'm going to tell you right now, I couldn't care less. Because 77 to 80, I wanted to be him. And then Jedi, he's coming back. Halfway through Jedi, I'm going, what have you done to him? So really, Han is Star Wars and Empire. By the time you get to Jedi, you know, he's
awesome. Yeah, I didn't know about this because I live in a vacuum sometimes, but... Yeah, I don't have a real umbrage with the idea because if it doesn't look like something I'll see, I won't see it.
Exactly. I should clarify. I don't mean that I'm against it. I'm saying certain elements on the internet are going, oh, no, how could they? And those guys and this and that. And I kind of go, I really don't care.
You know what? I'm not a huge fan of Gene Simmons, but he once spoke out to his critics who said you over merchandise, mm-hmm. and his retaliation was great. He said, "Vote by not buying."
Yeah,
and that's the best thing you can do is just not buy it. And
if you don't dig it, don't go.
Yep. And
messing with that Magic Mike sequel, I'm never doing that again.
It was hard to resist, but you know I've seen it only the requisite two times.
It's hard to resist the Wednesday opening, but
Yeah.
I'll take the next one here. Worst. Is that really your next one?
Yeah.
All right. The next category is worst Godzilla movie.
Yeah. What is your least favorite Godzilla movie?
Well, I think you're far more versed in Gojira than I am. But the 3 second on the top of my head answer is the 1997 Matthew Broderick piece of shit.
Wow. I never even considered that, which I think applies. But, yeah, I mean, I was thinking classic, but I never gave you those parameters, and you're absolutely right. That is as I remember, the Globe and Mail, which is a paper here, had a beautiful picture of Hank Azaria shouting, and they put a word balloon, and they said, "It's god awful." And that was, you know, I didn't see it in the theater. It looked like a train wreck. I have seen it once since then. It is a train wreck. It's not even you know, they shouldn't have called it Godzilla, but if they'd call it anything, it was lame.
It was everybody hold. Everybody hold. Hey, come on.
Jesus Christ. So, anyways, let's get back into you're talking about the 97 Godzilla. Absolutely a mess, I think, in terms of reinterpreting the character.
Terrible.
Yeah.
It to me is, and not that we're talking about, you know, a hugely complex character here, but it's just like putting people in charge of something that they have really no understanding of. What made it work, why it works, the tone.
And it seemed to be more at that time about getting the summer promotions and the action figures than getting it right, I found. So.
Well, there's a whole famous you know, debacle at the time, which was the campaign. You remember that?
Yeah.
The whole idea was to hide Godzilla until the 11th hour. And the main campaign was size does matter.
Right.
And it was everywhere. And then, of course, the punchline was, no, it don't, man. You can put everything you want behind it, but if it's not there. But see, that whole thing started to happen with the whole, you know, I'm not going to name names, but there's that period in the mid-90s when everything became, it wasn't even like A to B, it was like A to D instantly. Everything was sort of telegraphed and playing on the winky sort of, here's the best way to put it. You suddenly had a generation of filmmakers, storytellers, directors, idiots. In the late 60s, there was that first generation that came out of film school that changed everything. Coppola, Lucas, Spielberg. I don't know if Spielberg went to film school, but Scorsese, all these guys. And the studio heads being completely out of touch. But they were the first generation of guys that they were doing their own thing, but they were hugely influenced by John Ford and Orson Welles and Hitchcock, you know, whatever. Brian De Palma, Hitchcock, you know what I mean? So that was that first time that happened. Well, I feel like in the mid-90s, with Independence Day and Godzilla and Armageddon and the – you know, it's – now you're all studying those guys, the Spielbergs of the world, but you don't know why those things worked. You really don't. You're relying on, you know, a wise-ass comment or irony or playing it for laughs, whatever, and that's not why those things work. They were great scripts. At the core of it, Jaws is a great script. Raiders is a great script. 1941 is a great – I'm kidding. But, you know, you know what I mean?
That almost slipped that right by me. I would have just gone and just
– It's not just, you know, just add water and it's going to happen. And nothing – I'm completely digressing here, but nothing smacked me more in the face than – there was a good time for about 5 years when anybody would talk about bad movies. I would turn to them and say, was it Armageddon bad? Literally every single moment in that film is a car commercial or a bike commercial or a Coke commercial or whatever. There's no understanding of storytelling whatsoever, and that's – it's a giant lizard, but whatever. Where's the story with anything?
Yeah, you got me beat, because my choice is actually a 70s film called Terror of Mechagodzilla, which I couldn't exactly quantify why. I like, you know, Godzilla movies go up and down, and there's some really crappy ones. But
no.
that one's taking itself seriously, and I still am not as... I would rather watch, you know, Jet Jaguar and Godzilla fight Megalon, which is a real low point for the series. And I'd rather watch that because there's something entertaining about that. I don't know how to explain it other than that.
Let me ask you this then, because you know these movies far better than I do. Mm-hmm. The original films. When did he cross over into the jumping, the making the hand gestures, the getting frustrated, little dances and things? When did that start to happen with him?
He became a good guy in the 60s.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not super fresh in my mind, and there's a lot of people who could correct me, but, you know, that he was a bad guy for a little while, and then they realized that, I think at the same time, another company was making those Gamera movies.
Gamera!
Yeah, and the appeal of how Gamera was selling out to kids made them understand, hey, how is
Gamera selling out to kids?
Because it was a real kids movie, man. Gamera movies are really... The first Gamera movie is like a bit serious, but the rest of them are pretty juvenile. That's why Mystery Science Theater had such a heyday with them.
Yeah, well, the turtle guy, right?
Yeah, the flying turtle that has flames coming out of his butt. And I adore Gamera movies, but they're pretty bad. So yeah, they kind of decided to tone Godzilla down a little bit and make him a good guy, and I think we're better for it. But for some reason, Terror of Mechagodzilla is like one of my least favorites.
You know, I always said, and I know it's a different world now because we're so connected and all this stuff, but for the longest time, Japan literally was like another planet.
Oh, I still think in some ways it is. That's why it appeals to me so much.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. But like if something broke, you know, in Japan or whatever, you know, what I'm saying? If something broke 6 months earlier, it first broke in Japan.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I love Japan. I love Japanese culture.
My question is, when they started to do the dances and the hand gestures and Curly Stooge stuff, were they playing that for laughs? Were they going, look at Godzilla being
goofy? They were doing it for kids.
They were doing it for kids.
Yeah.
Frickin' kids.
Making it more friendly for kids like you and me.
Okay.
And they also, you know, they also had Godzilla and Anguirus talking in one of them. And I was recently trying to rewatch that one. It was called Godzilla on Monster Island here.
Was that the one with the little guy?
No. This is one just... it's not a great one. I think it got released here in 79, but I think it was made in Japan in 72, and it's
jeez.
I was shocked to read the other day when Godzilla movies actually stopped in Japan, and I think we were still getting them for 4 or 5 years after. So,
and when did it? And again, we gotta get to the next thing.
Yeah.
When did it really start to blow up here? That we sort of
immediately.
I mean, sorry, I said here. That was terrible.
The same guy, I believe, the same guy who distributed the Hercules movies. I could be wrong here. He got the Godzilla. The Godzilla was an immediate hit here. Massive.
That was you're talking about the Orson the
very first Raymond Burr one was
Raymond
a smash.
Burr one. Right. Yeah. Right.
So yeah, no, it was an immediate hit, and he became a household word. I mean, Aurora made a Godzilla kit in the early 60s.
That's right.
You know, that's huge. You're a made man.
I think my most immediate sort of enduring image is, I could be really wrong about this, and if anybody knows what I'm talking about, please chime in St. Paul, Minnesota. There was two theaters at the Maplewood Mall, 6 and 6. And, you know, as was very common in the 70s, there'd be black and white shots of movie stars on the walls.
Yeah.
Like the wallpaper was Bogart and Redford.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I grew up looking Laurel and Hardy, I'm sure. And
exactly. And what's her name? Raquel Welch. And I recall the image every time I went to that theater. I turn around, look up, and there was Godzilla. And it's that image of him like biting the train in half.
Yeah, I've got that in my bathroom.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy, crazy image. That's what I think of when I think of Godzilla.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. So
wait, okay. Sorry, let's go back. Did you say that's in your bathroom?
Yeah, I have a bathroom full of postcards and publicity stills.
Right on.
I have Betty Page in there, Uschi Degard, you know.
You should let her out.
I should. Especially my bathroom.
Do you have Prince Albert in a can?
Yeah, I let him out. All right, so let's move on to the next one.
Moving on.
Worst Happy Days character.
Oh, come on. That's like saying leprosy or... All right, back me up here. We went from Fonzie to Chachi. Was there a kid under Chachi?
Oh, that's a good question.
I swear there was a kid under Chachi that was even more obnoxious than Chachi.
Oh, God, I think you're right.
And that's the first thing that comes to mind is that prick.
Oh, what is happening? Yeah, okay, now I have to look that up. While I look that up, I'll explain my worst one.
Please.
Which is Jenny Piccolo.
Who? And
Jenny Piccolo.
Who's Jenny Piccolo?
Jenny Piccolo was the little girl down the street that was basically for... Happy Days, what did that run, 26 seasons?
27, I think.
27. She was the Vera of the show. In that they spoke of her and her crazy house all the time, but it was never actually, you know, physically a character.
Was she like the little redheaded girl in Peanuts? You never saw her?
Well, I think you did see the little redheaded girl in Peanuts, but it's more like Vera from Cheers.
I don't think you did see the redheaded girl. Did you see the redheaded girl?
You did.
We eventually saw her?
Well, she was always in passing, right? She'd be on a bus driving by that schmuck.
Yeah, she was uptight, man.
Yeah, so they added her in 80, I think, to fill in for Richie. And it was actually Phil Silver's daughter. I can't remember her real name.
What's going ahead, everybody?
And in the series finale, Mr. Piccolo arrived, and it was actually Phil Silver's.
Good gravy!
And it was just kind of an embarrassing sort of thing. You're almost poking through the fourth wall by adding a character that you've talked about all these years. And of course, the show is the coiner of Jump the Shark. So,
it truly is, yes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would say Ted McGinley's character, but that Jenny Piccolo thing drove me crazy. Spike Fonzarelli is who you're thinking
Spike!
Of.
Spike!
Yes.
The Scrappy Doo of Happy.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And right?
Yes, I agree.
The Scrappy Doo of Happy Days.
Yeah.
That I remember that kid, and I also remember, you know, sort of tuning away, and then it was one of those shows that just you'd walk away for the longest time, and then one night you're just, you know, you're 14 and you're flipping around and you come across it and you go, oh shit, this is still on?
Yeah.
How long have I been asleep?
Yeah, in fact, I remember reading in the paper that Happy Days had its last episode and was canceled. Now, my first thought was, oh my God, that's still on?
I'll tell you what, you know, everybody talks about the jumping the shark thing. It became when Fonzie wanted to fight everybody, and everybody, there were fights in a sitcom that were cartoonish. And
oh yeah, it really became silly. Ridiculous.
It was the definition of something's working, let's beat it to death.
Yeah.
Which, you know, everything is, of course, eventually does or seems to.
Well, thank God we learned our lesson and don't have characters like that now, Bazinga.
I have no comment.
Wise.
I don't speak your language. I don't know what you're talking about.
Because you're in a house Sheldon built, sir.
I do not from your country, I'm afraid.
So let's move on to one.
Let's move on. Favorite religion.
Yeah.
Let's keep it light.
All right. Well, I'm Church of Subgenius. anyway, worst Doctor Who. I know. Have you heard of the show,
Brian? May I?
Yes.
Could we clarify for the listeners? Are we talking about? Are you saying who was the worst Doctor Who? Are you
calling No. Worst Doctor Who episode. Okay. Let's not go to that.
I'm not
one.
Trying to be an anorak, but come on.
No. Okay, and it's classic Doctor Who.
Okay.
You want me to go first?
You're saying worst story.
Yes.
Okay, you go first.
I got to go with Kinda.
Oh, God.
It's boring as hell. It doesn't really go anywhere. Did I mention it was dull? And it was really at the height of my Doctor Who fandom. And this new season with Davison, you know, a new Doctor after, you know, years of Baker, it wasn't winning me over, but this one was like, oh, this show's getting crappy. I've read articles where people have revisited Kinda and said it's not so bad. Well,
yeah, you know what?
It always sounds like, well, this fart doesn't smell too bad. You're still smelling a fart, and I'm just not a fan of it. It's actionless. Not that every episode had to have action, but some would have been great. And
can I modify the answer?
Mm-hmm.
Am I able to really be a jerk and say, can I pick like that whole first season?
So you're talking like Castrovalva, Ford of Doomsday.
You know, you want to do a quick 30-second rundown of the titles?
Well, I think I am.
No, but I mean, and then you know, qualify them. First one was
Castrovalva.
Here's the thing:
which was a math problem, as I recall.
Hey, John Nathan Turner, are you listening? Here's an idea: stupid ass one word titles suck. Time Flight, Castrovalva, Logopolis, Earthshock had a moment or two.
Earthshock is the only one when I taped it off BBC Kids I kept wanting to watch.
Was it because of the 97-year-old captain of the ship?
What, isn't she from Are You Being Served?
Sorry, I don't think we can say that on air, can we?
What, the
Mrs. Slocum's pussy?
Well, in the proper sense, yes. Earthshock is
Was she on Are You Being Served?
I thought she was.
Hey, listen, I heard a thing once on the internet. There might have been a gay character on that show.
No, that wasn't obvious at all.
I've done loads of research, come up with nothing so far, but...
I think you better check your sources.
I feel like 50, 60 years from now, you know, the more enlightened, whoever comes next, are going to unearth that show one day and go, what? What year was this made? When? Wait a second. When was this made? Was it turn of the century or was it... No, it was like mid-70s. Good Lord.
Okay, I don't think it's actually her. It's Beryl Reed.
It's Beryl Reed. It's not her.
Yeah, I don't know. She was Grandma Mole on the the Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, and I was getting her mixed up.
It's just the kind of casting that Nathan Turner was into.
Yeah, he kind of liked that. That's probably the standout of the season. They kill off Adric.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoilers. And
Ark of Infinity was that piece of crap.
Was Ark of Infinity in that season? I don't think
yes.
It was.
No. I'm sorry. No. Four to Doomsday is what I'm thinking.
Four to Doomsday was, yeah.
Invitation.
As I recall, I remember saying, that's better than Castrovalva. Because our PBS station made us suffer through, like, you know, 11 hours of Pledge Week so we could watch Castrovalva and Four to Doomsday.
Good
and yeah, I remember inviting my friends over, and we all had a Doctor Who party, and it was lamer than you could imagine, actually, just because those weren't real knock it out of the park stories. Kinda was the next week, which was very irritating. The Visitation, I don't actually mind.
It's interesting. It's funny. The sense memory that comes up sometimes. You know what it was? I loved the show so much.
Yeah.
I loved Tom Baker so much that the vibe that I fell in love with, and I'm just throwing titles out here, you know, Genesis of the Daleks and Terror of the Zygons and Santaran Experiments and all that jazz, you know, by his last season, kind of like I was saying about watching those episodes where Spock sort of gets hurt and stuff.
Yeah.
First two or three stories, I feel like the character of the Doctor gets really beat up.
He's not. I think what they were trying to do was get away from the Doctor Who Superman thing, but they went too far from it. They took away they just stripped him of everything.
Well, he becomes like a gray old man.
Yeah,
it seems like his limbs get pulled apart.
Yeah,
you know that was a tough night. When those credits rolled, I went, "What just happened?"
I remember that too. Yeah.
And then he turns, and, you know, he's a cactus or whatever.
Yes.
Now all that, and then it was really apparent that something was going on with Tom Baker, that he was not having a good time.
Yeah.
He was not the Doctor that I loved a couple years before, and so things started to change, and I didn't.
Well, they had him napping in the very first scene.
He's on the beach with they're napping.
Yeah.
No, it just that's I think what it was. And from that and the way he suddenly was gone.
Mm.
I'd never experienced that before. You had Pertwee.
Yeah, I can vividly remember hating Tom Baker for about 8 minutes.
Isn't that funny?
And then going, I kind of like him.
You know what really occurs to me that just I went, oh, well, that's just, you know, here's my 11-year-old, you know, nose in the air. Oh, you bastards.
Yeah.
Was the scene in Castrovalva
where he destroys the scarf,
unravels the scarf.
Yeah.
Which is like Nathan Turner going, goodbye, Tom. You're never coming back. It was just a, you know, you became a clown or whatever. It's just a scarf. And it's kind of pissing on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just, I gave him a chance. I don't mind Davison's, you know, stuff. He's okay. He's always out of breath. Made me crazy.
I'm just, you know what? I think he's good. I just think he was a bit misused. And I think he left because of that, too. His stories are often not stories. And there should have been more concentration on that. You know, it was all a lot of flash and glamour. I'm not a big. I've read the John Nathan Turner book, and I have an understanding of what's going on there. But I'm just not a fan of his style of Doctor Who. And he actually he redeemed himself to me by the end because I like some of the Sylvester McCoy years. But those.
Well, again, I think he was lucky. I don't think he understood it. I think he was. He was good at publicity, and he was good at politicking a bit.
Yeah, I think who was that guy? Andrew Cartmell kind of saved the series for me.
I mean, the ballsiest thing he ever did was to turn down the Radio Times cover with the Cybermen because it would have spoiled the surprise for Earthshock.
Yeah,
that was huge to turn that down. That kind of publicity,
mm-hmm.
but he became a monster and an arrogant monster, and understood the show less and less. And the thing that I remember reading more than anything about him was he kind of stuck with the show because the BBC was kind of like, if you leave, the show is done.
Yeah, he was kind of landlocked, too. Wasn't going to be a lot of work for him anywhere.
That's the other thing. It's like, if you leave, the show's done.
So
and
are you.
B, what are you going to do? Nobody wants you. Let's do an entire episode roasting John Nathan Turner.
Well, it's kind of...
Wait,
a bit late.
I did my worst. I said the whole season.
Yeah, no, you're right. You've kind of done it. So let's subcategory to that is worst Doctor Who monster.
The Melker.
The Merka?
The Merka.
Merka's absolutely mine.
No, the Melker. Melker.
Oh, you don't like the statue.
No, the Merka. You're
the
right.
Merka.
The Merka. Warriors of the Deep.
You know, this is an Abbott and Costello bit.
It really is. But massive, massive nerds trying to get a monster right from 80s Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
My favorite thing, though, it's...
Stand by while I go put on some Asia.
Yeah, okay. Oh, heat of the moment, please. My favorite part of that, though, actually, I knew a guy that actually carved Asia into his desk.
Come on.
My favorite part of that, though, is it's reluctant to say the Merka. And if you haven't, if you're not a Doctor Who fan, please Google Doctor Who Merka. Is Ingrid Pitt in a scene that just, like, I love Ingrid Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
But in a scene that just defies dignity, where she tries to kung fu this pantomime horse. It is like, really? This is it brings me so much joy.
Nearly 20 years before, the team behind Star Trek kind of knew at a certain point, if they didn't have it, you know, make some flashy lights. That'll be the monster.
Yep.
You know, make a string move the thing across the room. Who always thought I could get away with it? And it always killed me as a kid because I thought, this is the only drama, the only video, the only thing I've ever seen that looks like this is British or British sitcoms. An American sitcom, like, you know, Three's Company. I've never seen a drama that looked like this. And it's warts and all. You can't get away with anything. When you go back and look at Warriors of the Deep, you can literally smell the paint drying on the floor.
Well, and the other thing is about the – oh, wait. We got some issues. Are you
what's wrong?
I can hear myself reverberating back.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. It's gone now. The other thing I wanted to say was into the Nathan Turner, not to throw him under the bus yet again, he seemed to up the lights. Whereas, you know, in the Hinchcliffe era, Hinchcliffe worked in shadow.
Yes.
It was like every light out was on in the gymnasium. So that there was no subtlety to it either. And,
you know, listen, I'll come in as public defender here for a moment. Anybody that really wants to rip that show apart in that era, 70s, whatever, I will argue with, because I'll say, here's the thing. This was a different story every 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
They had $12. They had 5 minutes to get it together. And when you do look back at what worked, the Ark in Space, Genesis, whatever, it's a miracle that they pulled off what they did. And it was the team.
If we didn't have the Ark in Space, we wouldn't have we probably wouldn't have the new Who, because that's Russell T. Davies' favorite episode, Doctor Who.
Well, I'm not going to – that speech – oh, stop. Pause me, Hyler. Pause me. Mm. Hey, cool it, man. Cool it. Okay, we're back.
Yeah.
What did you just say? Say that again.
Well, Russell T. Davies was so heavily influenced.
The scene.
Yeah.
The scene in Ark when he says, you know, Homo sapiens. They're my favorite species.
I don't know if I told you this on the podcast – or not, but I was watching that. I was blown away with that. I was probably like 6 or 7, and my dad walked in and went, "Oh well," completely. You know, my parents were kind of riffers at the time.
And was his thing like, you know, Mr. Fancy Pants, Tom Baker?
Yeah, he was kind of like, "Oh well, thank you, whoever you are." You know, just they didn't take science fiction very seriously.
I know we probably talked about this, because we've done 74 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Today.
I think my single favorite image, moment in all of Tom Baker, I bet you'll know what it is. It's the beginning of Pyramids of Mars. He's in the control room. The camera pushes in. His head is sort of tilted downwards with the hat on. And he brings his head sort of up toward the camera, looking off to the right. And he's in a mood. And then Sarah Jane comes in and she says, "Oh, hello." And he says, "Oh, hello, Victoria." Because she's wearing that white thing. And he gets a sulk on because he's talking about walking in eternity or something.
Yeah, I'm a Time Lord. I walk in eternity. And she's bugging him about midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, we touched on this a while ago with Christopher Lee and why Christopher Lee would make a good Doctor Who. It's because some of the best Doctor Whos were great villains. William Hartnell was an a-hole in every movie he played. I can't tell you about Troughton, but Tom Baker was pretty much just villains all the time.
That's true, yeah.
And, you know, and Sylvester McCoy was a bit creepy. You know, Eccleston obviously has played more than his fair share of villains. If you have that dark side and you can kind of turn that around, it makes the character more interesting. And Baker had it in spades.
I always thought that Timothy Dalton would have been a great doctor.
Oh, I think, absolutely.
You know, at a certain point, he did make it into the new show.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, and we could talk about Who for days.
Yeah, we
I got to tell you,
literally have.
I mean, I am not trashing anybody. Everybody's got their stuff. I love Troughton. I dig Pertwee. I probably dig Troughton more. But when Baker shows up, and anybody that's hearing this again for the umpteenth time, if you don't really know it, please go back and look at his first season or two. It is so instantaneous the way he takes control of the character.
Yeah, he doesn't have any time to feel himself out. He's got it.
Nothing. And it's almost as if the flipping character didn't exist before he got there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's not really paying attention to much that happened before. He's doing his own thing. Troughton was very clownish and almost kind of camp, where he goes, don't kill me, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Baker was just mental, but in control, you know, and it's incredible, and it has to do with the writing too. The writing was so good.
Yeah, no, I think there was a lot of engines firing on full there, and mm-hmm. but you're right. He really did just kind of own it right away.
Just owned it.
Like I said, I didn't like him for about 8 minutes, and by the end of the first episode of Robot, I love him. So let's keep going on, so we can. this mini-sode's going to be a regular episode. Worst Filmation show.
Ooh.
Yeah. You want mine?
Yeah.
Sport Billy. I like to say I was born without a sports gene. I was not fabulous at sports until I was in my 20s. Clumsy, big-footed kid with asthma. I did not want to watch a show about a kid who was good at sports. That was not really high on my list. The other thing that was kind of funny, though, was I had a kid in my class named Billy who looked exactly like that character, and that became his nickname. I'm not sure if that makes him angry to this day, but that show was – I loved – if I saw the Filmation logo, I would get excited about a show because they made so much stuff that was full of wind, you know, like Tarzan. And Sport Billy was a real
– I don't even know what you're talking about.
Be good. You're lucky.
Sport Billy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what this is. Was this a live action?
No, it was a animated show.
I don't remember this at all.
I believe it was made in conjunction with Germany. Yes, it was.
Well, I can tell you, I'm looking at the first picture I've seen of Sport Billy, and I do want to punch him.
Yeah, well, and you know, I would like to say it's the worst thing that ever came out of Germany, but I can't back that up.
It might be number two.
Yeah.
It could be.
A distant. One,
but I'm just going to, if I'm going to put money down, I'm saying it's coming in at a close two.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair.
Something else came out of there that I can't put my finger on it, but
yeah, I think they were. I seem to recall something about my great grandfather being targeted. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. It'll come to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy,
not good memories.
Worst filmation series show. All right, you're gonna have to confirm or deny some of this, but
sure.
I'm gonna go just because I kind of hated it, was Captain Cool and the Kongs.
Nope, Croft.
That's Croft?
Yeah.
Didn't Filmation do live action stuff too?
They did. Yeah.
Bigfoot and...
Nope, what? Croft.
That was Croft?
Yeah. But Captain Cool and the Kongs.
Hey, sorry, Captain Cool and the Kongs.
Are you?
I'm taking it back. My bad. I didn't mean to throw you in the Filmation bus. All right. Then it's got to be Gilligan's Planet.
Ooh, with Booper?
Yeah.
You know what's weird is I really loved... What's that?
No. It's the Fonzie show with the dog.
That was Hanna-Barbera.
Ah, shit.
But, you know, the Gilligan's Planet's a good one because if you remember in the mid-70s, they did the New Adventures of Gilligan Filmation, which I really liked as a kid. And so when Gilligan's Planet came out, I thought, oh, I'm going to like this just as much, but... Yeah, the magic. Not to say there was a ton of magic in the old one, but yeah, it isn't that inspired.
You know what's funny about that? This might kind of blow your mind.
Oh, will it?
Well, here's this strange netherworld in the 70s where these shows that did okay or kind of failed in the 60s become crazy sort of syndicated hits in the 70s.
That never happened again, really.
And the people paying attention to it go, we got to keep this thing going. Let's do an animated thing. To which, if you think about now, would be the equivalent of, you know, us turning on television and going, look, there's an animated Designing Women.
Mm. When did that happen? Now I really want that to happen.
You know, there's a they did a cartoon of We've Got It Made.
Oh, stop.
Who knew?
It's a living, the animated series.
It's a living. Charles in Charge, the
Who Gives a Crap?
The puppet show. You know, that's kind of what it is if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
Try to put all the stuff from the 70s or the early 80s that was
227 babies.
227 babies.
Yeah.
That actually could probably get greenlit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Jack Hay is available.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, the new Odd Couple again.
I think now at this point it is the new Odd Couple.
Do you remember the animated Odd Couple, the Oddball Couple?
The Oddball Couple? I might have the coloring book inches away from from this desk right now.
I ask you, our seven listeners.
Yes.
What other show could a man say to another man, do you remember the obscure Oddball
Couple? Patty Freeling cartoon? That was
two dogs that lasted a week and have the other fella say, do I remember it? I've got the coloring book, oh boy.
I loved that show. I loved Paul Winchell's voice in it. Yeah. And it was so brilliant. Felix was a cat and Oscar was the dog.
Oh, I thought they were both dogs.
No.
Oh, I misunderstood it all these years.
Yeah, it's not a great show. And I have purposely never, ever gone to YouTube and watched more than 6 seconds of it. Because it's like, no, I really liked that as a kid. I think I'll just leave that alone.
You just said two words to Patty Freeling.
Yeah.
There was a time in the, you know, Saturday morning thing, Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show. And the cartoons, you know, they would just kind of come up randomly. And you remember they would do the title card and then it would be. But before the thing came out, they would just do, look, it's, you know, Duck Amuck or whatever. And then every now and then, and we're just kids, you know. Every now and then, there would be this, what I now understand to be a Patty Freeling, Daffy Duck, or a Speedy Gonzales cartoon. Do you remember those and the rhythm of them and the?
Yeah, they weren't as
trippy, man. They were really trippy.
Yeah,
I'm sitting there going, "Who got a hold of these? This is not the cartoon I remember." You know, and suddenly. Every other one was Daffy and Speedy against each other? I don't know. I'm just saying, I think DePatty Freeling was a...
Yeah, they were weird and kind of cheap cartoons.
They were terrible!
Yeah. Well, they did that Planet of the Apes cartoon, which I love, but it's so small. You know, it's so limited in its animation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, I'm such a Planet of the Apes guy that I still love it and have it on DVD.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, so.
All right, we're going to move on to.
Worst Muppet Show guest.
Muppet Show guest. The 70s Muppet Show, 1976, 77?
Yeah, it ran till, it ran a while.
It was actually filmed in England, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
So a lot of UK talent on this show.
There was, like, you know, you got Marty Feldman and things like that. And
Peter Sellers.
Peter Sellers. There's a wonderful list at Muppet Wiki.
All right.
And I had to go through this because I really didn't have an inkling. But I had to say, for me, and I hope my father-in-law is not listening, but I know he isn't.
Uh-oh.
Buddy Rich was
never
a
liked
strange
Buddy Rich.
Guest to have on The Muppet Show because he's not versatile. He's a drummer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Buddy Rich.
Yeah.
I got it mixed up with Buddy Hackett.
Love Buddy Hackett.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, I do.
You know what comes to mind when I think of Buddy Hackett? Anytime he was on television, my father was in the room, he'd go, this guy's filthy. He's got a filthy mouth.
He does.
He does. And I go, nah, what are you talking about? He's on Carson. He's like, well, you can't say it on Carson. And I suddenly started to sort of imagine him as this filthy comic. I never heard any of it. I heard loads of Red Fox stuff, but I never heard.
Oh, Red Fox, so smutty.
I never heard Buddy Hatch, but Buddy Rich was on the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't get Murnau.
Yeah, I don't. It was a weird. He's a weird choice, and I mean, I get it. I mean, it's a variety show, but I just thought that there wasn't. He didn't offer much, you know. He was no Loretta Swit.
But who is?
Very few.
I didn't even remember he was.
Yeah.
You know what comes to mind? And I'm not giving this as my answer as the worst.
Yeah.
That was that whole period where, like, for some reason, 10 years after she burst onto the scene, somebody said, you know, Raquel Welch can kind of carry a tune.
Ooh, yeah, that was weird.
And she can move around a bit. Let's give her a variety special.
I seem to remember that period.
And she's like dancing with a giant spider on the Muppet Show. You remember that?
Kind of, yeah.
And it's clearly like a man in a, you know, with a bunch of pipe cleaners out of his legs or something.
I don't remember the Nancy Walker episode of the Muppet Show, but I kind of want to. You know, for me, the Muppet Show is like Vincent Price, Alice Cooper, and the Star Wars characters.
God, when you say Nancy Walker, you know what comes to mind?
Thank God It's Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God It's Friday. She directed it. Village People, Bruce Jenner. Wait, am I getting the right one? Village People, Bruce Jenner, Valerie Perrine, Steve Guttenberg.
Yep.
The rap party, Guttenberg said, got weird because somebody was pumping amyl nitrate through the vents. And Nancy Walker got all weird.
I got to be honest with you. That was the strangest night in 1991 I ever spent because I watched that.
The film?
Yeah, I watched it in my dorm room going.
Oh, I saw it once, yeah.
Yeah,
it's so mental.
Yeah.
You're watching it going, this is still going. They're still filming. Like, this actually happened.
What's the point of this?
This wasn't a commercial. This was a full-on movie.
Yeah, and somebody gave somebody money for this, so.
It's like the equivalent of, do you remember the FedEx guy that talked fast?
Yeah, John Machida.
Good gravy. Of course you know his name. It's like somebody saw him and said, give him a trilogy.
Yeah. Well, you know, it'll be over in 16 minutes.
He'll be around for a while. Give him a
Micro Machines guy.
A six-picture deal.
Okay, let's.
Each script, work in a thing where he talks fast.
But only once at the end.
Only once.
I was just watching an interview with what's his name from the Jerky Boys. And they were asking him about the movie, and they were going, so who heard your crank calls and decided that was a movie? And he said, Disney. You know?
Really?
Yeah. You know, like, I don't begrudge him for taking the money and running and making a film, but it's like, wow, that's weird that they were selling records, but it's like, you know, the Jerky Boys were kind of just a funny little aside, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like making Grumpy Cat a celebrity. Oh, wait, never mind.
Or wait, they're turning Mr. Jaws into a TV series.
Shh.
Wow. Yeah. Pulled that out of my butt.
Mr. Jaws, Dickie Goodman?
Good God.
I listened to Dickie Goodman.
Brian, what's the things that should be in those rooms in your head? Where is all that information?
I don't know. I couldn't find my pin to log in at work today. It was fabulous.
Yeah, you know why? Because you got
Dickie Goodman in there.
Dickie Goodman and Valerie Perrine making out in your head. Worst Star Wars ripoff.
Yes. I think we probably have the same answer for this one.
Well, I mean, worst Star Wars ripoff.
Because the best, you know, like there's a lot of creative stuff out there, but like stuff like Star Crash for me is entertaining as all hell. So I have to come down to what bored the snot out of me, and that would be Shape of Things to Come.
Oh my God!
The Canadian classic starring Barry Morse and is Palance in that one?
Oh, who cares? I don't know if it's
filmed at Ontario Place.
Is it Palance? Is it what's his name from Escape from New York? Is it Carradine? Who cares? They're all the same guy. They say two things. They pick up a check. Let me tell you something. Shape of Things to Come was me on a Sunday looking at the Sunday paper And my father's saying, I'll take you to a movie, you know. And he says, well, what about this one? And what, I don't remember what it was. I don't remember what he suggested. And I just pushed for this Shape of Things to come. And all I remember is the awfulness and sitting in the theater and looking up at my dad and having him look down at me and kind of chuckle like, welcome to the world, kid. It's a big ripoff, you know. And he just kind of – my father was laughing. He wasn't laughing at me, but he was laughing at the choice and how awful this thing was.
It was a few years later for me when I rented Laser Blast that I got that, like, oh, because my folks were really sparingly with the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I rented Laser Blast, and I'd read about it in Starlog, and I had made this choice, and it took me, I think, two. You remember when you rented a VCR for the entire weekend?
Sure.
It took me about two viewings to realize Laser Blast is really bad. You know, there really isn't much going on there. And Shape of Things to Come, I never saw it until I was in my 30s. I watched it on the French channel.
The French channel? Is that slang for dirty?
It can be. They have something called Bleu Nuit.
Oh, but
God bless the French. We had two. Just I'm going to get off on a sidetrack. When I was 14, at 2 a.m, in my neighborhood, you had the Italian movie, and the God bless.
Oh,
God bless Italy. They would play a dirty Italian movie at 2 a.m.
I'm telling you,
every friggin' teenager in my town knew that.
I'm telling you, I knew when I sat in the theater and I was watching Flash Gordon.
Yeah,
I knew General Kahlo looked familiar to me.
Oh, really?
It was swept away with Giancarlo Giannini.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They'd run that thing on like in midnight on Saturday night with them both dubbed in, and all kinds of horrible stuff was happening.
the French channel played Shape of Things to Come, and I used to only get like 12 channels, and two of them were French, so you would occasionally watch an episode of La Hulk Incroyable or, you know, Auto Man or whatever, just because you were just looking for something familiar, you know?
That's funny. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If you'd asked me a week or two ago, I would have probably said Shape of Things to Come. I might have paused and said, could be Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, because I can still smell how bad that thing stunk from the lobby.
You know what? Michelle and I have probably popped that on about once every 2 years. She loves
Space Hunter?
Yes.
Are you doing Whippets?
I gotta admit, part of it is my childhood crush on Molly Ringwald. That isn't, it now seems creepy.
She was 8.
I know, but so was I.
You might have had a shot back then.
I
would have said those two, but I gotta say, 2 weeks ago, I for the first time saw something on the internet that I was just mesmerized by. That's why I love the internet. As you know, I love the era of Star Wars between 77 and 80.
Yeah.
Because it was just this fertile, weird, weird time that everything wasn't sussed out. Everyone didn't have a last name and a background. The best example I can give of this, go to eBay sometime, I don't know where. Look up some of the UK products around 78. Look up some of the school supplies and the stickers and the way they drew Leia and all this weirdness.
Oh, yeah, it's a Wild West. I love that.
I love that shit. And something popped up on the internet a few weeks back that is a training inspirational video for a wine company.
Yeah, a guy popped that on Plaid Stallions about a month ago, and I wasn't smart enough to share it. And
it is.
I watched it though with my jaw open. Like I looked. Have you ever seen that episode of The Simpsons where they go to Branson?
That shitty park.
No, they go to Branson, and Nelson has to see I think it's Perry Como. That's how I looked. When Nelson's like got his hands together, and I watched that whole film. Like
It is mind-bogglingly. You can't describe that thing to people.
It's so amazing,
and it's amazing because what it is too is it's like you can just sit there with a notepad and check off how this whole thing came together.
Oh yeah,
fat executive going, "What's the big film that's out?" And then someone did it. And the jokes, like there's a joke like, "You crazy little microwave on wheels" or something.
Oh yeah, I know these guys are
just dated, like the moment it hit the paper.
Yeah, they're the greatest Sith Lords ever. You know, there's
it is a piece of art. It is an absolute piece of art.
I'm just trying
to. There's a 3PO ripoff, an R2 ripoff. It makes no sense. And
I will also tell you that being in the retail market that I am, I sat there thinking, oh, you know what? I took a couple hints from their.
This might have inspired some people.
No, I took a couple hints from their advice on shelving and stuff like that.
No, that's the bit I love where he has, and you've got this attractive, and then turn it around.
Yeah.
And it's gold.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful, and I'm really...
You know, I used to narrate this series, and then towards the end of it, it became it was like a sponsor, like a Lowe's what's the other one? Lowe's, and what's the other one?
Home Depot?
Toys R Us? Home Depot.
Yeah.
And there were these little tags that I suddenly would get into scripts, like, and it was, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, you know, bathroom too gloomy? Try opening, you know, no, stop. Bathroom too gloomy? Try some Venetian blinds and a little bit of, you know, arsenic or whatever the hell it was. And it got to a point where these things were so like, what's the John C. Reilly on?
Dr. Steve Brule.
They were literally Steve Brule things.
Yeah.
He's like, well, wash down your driveway, dingus.
Doofus, that's
what this stuff started to sound like. And this training thing was like, and if that's not attractive enough, turn the letters around and they're gold.
Yeah.
Oh, well, shit, that's going to stop them in their tracks.
I will admit to having a huge fascination with training films, like McDonald's training films. I used to get my friends to steal them from McDonald's so I could watch them. Because they would complain about how bad they were, and it's like, please, for the love of God. I got dragged out when I worked at Staples. I got dragged out on a Sunday morning to watch shoplifting training films, and they were like from the 70s. And I think I was the only person happy to be there.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, Taylor Wines, 1978 Holiday Race for Space. That is an inspired choice.
It is right in the pocket of.
It's still better than Shape Things to Come.
Yeah. It's still better than Phantom Menace.
It is. It is absolutely better than Phantom Menace.
It's right in that pocket of just what the. Like the second some of this stuff happened, you know, it really. Here's the thing, and you're a much sharper observer of this than I am, what I'm going to try to articulate here. Besides the cultural explosion of Star Wars, because I would stand by this. I don't think E.T. had it. I don't think something – what? Titanic? Avatar? Give me something in the past 40 years that has united the world the way Star Wars did.
No.
I don't mean we all put our guns down. I don't mean that. What I mean is the whole world collectively – had their little minds blown by this thing for a year or two. And it permeated its way into everything, into commercials and disco and fashion and jokes. And everybody was co-opting it. And, you know what I mean? Like, what else has done that?
Krull.
Besides Krull. Brian, will you never stop with Krull?
Yeah, no, you know what? I don't think know.
You're like the Krull endoskeleton.
Yeah. I mean,
just don't stop.
There's no one property. I mean,
by the way, for those of you playing at home, loads of great little references we're giving each other here.
Yeah, we really are.
You should be writing
lads.
I haven't even mentioned
the only thing I could say that was even close to it, and it's not one property, would be the video game explosion of the early 80s.
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
All right, well, I don't have anything else. No, you're right. You're right.
You're wrong.
That's an inspired choice, and I agree with it. I'm going to put a link to that up because that thing is so fun.
Thank you.
Let's end our episode now with a palate cleansing question.
Mm.
And I chose it this week. The next time we do a worst of, you can choose the palate cleanser. And this episode, it is Bailey or Jennifer.
The best way to answer this is if there were a buzzer in front of me right now, you wouldn't have been able to get the first word out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Bailey.
I have never met, other than Burt Reynolds, who I haven't met, a Jennifer. I've in my dorm room, WKRP was on 24 hours a day in the early 90s. I never met a guy who thought Jennifer was better than Bailey.
Well, but you know who did? They were all Herb Tarlicks.
Okay.
Let's not bag on Lonnie. She's probably
I'm not.
No, I'm saying that the second that walks through the door, those Herb Tarlicks go, whoa. You know, but the Andy Travises see Bailey and go, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
You know? Who, by the way, was Jan Smithers, yeah?
Yes.
No, that's not right.
Yep.
Yeah, no, Jan Smithers.
100% right.
Lonnie Anderson was Jennifer. You know, I gotta say, we could do a whole episode on WKRP. I fucking adore that show. And as far as I know, there's still only one season available on DVD.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of music rights problems, right?
Loads of music cue stuff.
Yeah.
It was top to bottom, that was a hell of a cast. That was a great, great cast. You know, Hessman, never been better. Tim Reed, Andy, haven't seen literally since, except for the smoking movie with Pacino and Russell Crowe. Beaches. I'm thinking of Beaches.
Okay. The last time I saw Gary Sandy was in a busted TV pilot. He kind of abandoned acting, it seemed.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that guy was going to be something, but Lonnie and Herb. Who was Herb again?
That was Frank Boers Jr.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he changed his name, Frank Bonner.
Frank Bonner. But don't you think?
He's in a very early horror film called Equinox. That's very good.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Okay.
But don't you think that what he was doing with Herb was way ahead of the curve?
Oh yeah,
meaning what he was making fun of, the belt, the shoes, the clothing, the hair, the horrible suits. This is 1978. The suits they're only a couple years old.
Yeah, but it worked and
completely worked. It completely worked. It was the equivalent of within a year or two, understanding what a members-only jacket was.
Yeah, now that character looks really extreme, but at that time,
it wasn't
still that see tough. Like your dad's friends wearing that. It really doesn't make it for an interesting.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah,
this is a standing sort of conversation I've had over
sure.
the years. Let's say it's 1968. No, it's 1969. You can be a jet fighter pilot. You can be a Don Draper kind of fella. You can be an astronaut. Who's getting the most action?
Good Lord. It doesn't matter. Probably astronaut.
There's no question it would be astronaut.
Okay.
There's no question it would be astronaut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
You're right. You're right.
Don Draper could have two heads the same walk in the room, and, you know, Fatty Arbuckle could go, well, I'm going to the moon tomorrow.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And then he'd order a Coke.
Yeah. Astronauts are cool. I still use that move.
Which one?
With the ladies. I say, hey, I'm an astronaut. And then I pick up my kids, you know. It doesn't work.
I can't believe I managed to get Fatty Arbuckle mentioned in the show. Why is it taking so long?
I guess lack of trying.
You know that's a myth, right? You know that never – you know that
– I know all about that. Why, I don't know.
Can we do a Fatty Arbuckle show?
No.
And then we'll do a Mary Pickford. The fans will go nuts.
The
Our fans have been waiting for our silent film series. Listen, we'll start with the early Our Gang shit. Move on to Pickford.
Wait a minute! The early R gangs—they're talkies.
Yeah, let's get all that. Let's do the history of cinema.
All right.
You know, screw it.
You know what?
With the Nation.
I not only do I not know enough about the history of cinema.
Clearly.
I also insist we're drunk when we do it.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be a great podcast.
I'd be down for that.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Well, that's another show. And
our next episode.
Our next episode will be very, very different. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great one. And we'll talk to you.
Brian and Jason in rehab.